Hello and welcome back to APIs You Won't Hate. My name is Mike Bifulco. I am sitting down today for a discussion with a friend of mine from the internet who I've been lucky enough to bump into once or twice in real life, who I'm super thrilled to talk with. Today I'm sitting down with Zeno Rocha from Resend to talk about, well, Resend and all the things that have led up to it and what's to come there and the developer features and API level things that Resend has been up to. Zeno, thanks a ton for joining me today. How are you doing?
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, it's been I'm so happy to be here. I'm really excited to be talking about APIs and everything around that. I just love DevTools in general, so this is exciting.
Well, you're definitely in good company here. I'm excited to chat with you about it as well. Why don't we start here? Why don't you tell me just a little bit about yourself, how you got to where you are, and maybe your story leading up to Resend, and we'll dive in from there.
Yeah, so I'm originally from Brazil. Nowadays, I live here in San Francisco with my wife and my two-year-old daughter. And I got into programming just like most of the people in my CS class. We just love playing games on our computers. So we're like, oh yeah, maybe that would be cool to do for work. And I got really into web development quite soon. I remember starting with Flash, actually. So ActionScript 3 was my first language. And I created all sorts of crazy things. And we can even put one in the show notes.
Oh,
but it's
cool.
This like particle thing where this was back in, I got to send you this because I think you appreciate it. So back in 2010 or 2009, I guess, we built this thing and then we sent to Google. Just to see, they had like this HTML5 gallery. So there's like a button on the left where you can click and it generates the particles. And this was my first time using JavaScript to create the weird things that I would do in Flash. And I was amazed. Like, and the source, you can see everything on GitHub. The source code is available. And I was really amazed at the power of this new thing that was coming up called HTML5. So I quickly transitioned from Flash to HTML5. And my perspective when I started was, okay, like and I always had this thing like, oh, I want to be the best of whatever I do, right? So I'm like, oh, to become the best PHP programmer, it's going to be so hard, or the best Java programmer, it's going to be so hard because like there are people that are doing this for like 20 years already, but HTML5 is this new thing that's coming up. Maybe if I run really hard, if I like really dive into this thing, then maybe I can get to the finish line in front of others, right? Turns out there's no finish line. You're always learning. There's like all sorts of things. Like there's no such, like programming is not a infinite game, right? Yeah, it is an infinite game, in fact. It's not a finite game. So you're always learning and always reinventing yourself as a programmer. But I just always enjoyed building stuff, man. Yeah.
I love that. That's really funny. I know you and I have never talked about this before. I don't think I've mentioned it on the podcast, but I've been building with JavaScript since around then, 2009. And I had been playing with HTML and CSS for like quite a long time leading up to that. Finished undergrad in 2009 and was lucky to start a job at Microsoft. And literally the catalyst that set off the rest of my career as like a front end developer was I was in a room when someone walked in and asked, does anyone know what jQuery is? And I said, oh yeah, I've used that. And then was fully like sucked into a gigantic project rebuilding Dell.com from like the third week of my job. And the rest is history from there. Like, you know, jQuery and MooTools and handlebars and all these things. And it's just like, it feels like a mess of things since then. And you're absolutely right that like, it never ends. It doesn't get easier. You know, it just changes slightly and more bugs pop up each week.
No, and I think there's like, when you mix that with open source, you get like a whole new beast to it, right? Like as you start contributing, as you start building your own projects, it's just fascinating how, it's a different world, man. It's so unique.
Yeah. A weird thing I feel like I've started to see with a few decades of working under my belt is that like familiar faces pop up after a while too. You know, like you will bump into the same people building interesting things over time, just kind of the way of the world and the way your network tends to work. And burning bridges is one of those things that I have been lucky not to do much in my career. And if you're listening, don't burn bridges because it can get dirty, you know.
You talked about MooTools, right? Like, who would have thought that Guillermo, who was a contributor on MooTools, will now be the CEO of Vercel, right? So yeah. That just goes to show that, it's a small world, this tech yes. community.
Something I like to ask my engineering friends is, what is the oldest thing that you've made that's still on the internet? Because you'll find out a lot about what people were doing, you know, way back when. That's it's on project. And I would imagine your HTML5 demo here, it probably goes back pretty far in terms of things that you've made that still exist, at least.
Yep. My first open source project that really popped up was something called jQuery Boilerplate. And I remember the story is actually pretty wild because I built that project and then launched it. And then Smashing Magazine picked it up and then it blew up. And I was just starting to learn about jQuery. And here I was thinking that I could build a boilerplate for jQuery. But I got this PR from a very well-known Node.js person that was basically like deleting all my code and saying, the title of the PR was something along the lines of like, delete everything. That's the only way that you can build this up again. And the diff was like actually like deleting everything. So I remember feeling so sad and so disappointed that I've created something that maybe wasn't good for this guru there, and then reaching out to people that I knew were doing interesting things like Adi Osmani. And alongside with him, we like recreated that project, and then it got much better and much bigger later. But it just goes to show that how interesting the community can be sometimes, but also how much you learn from it, which is the most interesting piece for me.
Certainly. So how did you get from there to Resend?
Man, I've done all sorts of crazy things. I've done a lot of, I built a theme called Dracula, which I think by now is like one of the most popular themes for VS Code and terminals and everything. I think it has like 6 million downloads on VS Code right now. That was a very big part of my love for building dev tools and building open source. I've done this project called Clipboard.js. Back in the day, the only way to do copy to Clipboard was using Flash. So then when this was released in JavaScript, I was so excited. And I think the repo still has like 30,000 GitHub stars.
Wow.
So I've done like all sorts of side projects. I've always loved the idea of side projects. That's another thing. Just I've always felt that with your 9-to-5 job, there's always a ceiling to what I would be able to learn. And maybe that's because that company just uses one language, right? Or they use one particular technology stack. So side projects, they always have been this outlet for creativity. And yeah. I did a little bit of product management. I did a little bit of a VP role in other places. I was a CPO at another company, but I've never really stopped loving JavaScript and open source and programming.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Dracula, by the way, is everywhere. I feel like I bump into it in places I don't expect half the time. And that's one of those things that like gets your name out into the open, like a lot of good side projects, like people start to recognize you and become a known quantity to people who've never truly actually met. But that ends up being a really helpful tool in the long term as well. Then jump forward to React Email. What is that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So one of my frustrations is that like for all these years, like I've used all sorts of APIs for email sending. Postmark, Mailgun, SendGrid, Mandrill, you name it, right? And I've always felt like these products were not built for me as an engineer. Maybe they are really nice for product managers or product marketers, but as an engineer who's like building a forget password flow, I wish there was something better. And I felt that frustration multiple times throughout my career, like sometimes dealing with like really big customers, like McDonald's having emails going to spam. I'm like, oh my gosh, like how do we fix this problem? And just me integrating a side project. So we just like try to come up with this idea of like, okay, what if email sending was better? Because it really feels like email sending as a whole industry got stuck in 1995 or something. Like, to do a rounded corner is extremely difficult still. So we're like, no, like me, like this whole idea of my email not rendering the same on Outlook and Gmail and Yahoo Mail and Superhuman, like that just, for me, like in 2023, that didn't, like my brain wouldn't process that idea. I'm like, we got to fix this. So we started building like an API for sending emails. But then as we were building, we're like, oh, the API is super cool. But there's this problem right before sending an email, which is the actual email template, like putting together that HTML. And people don't want to use tables. They don't like, it's just like so outdated. But what are they using now? They are using React, they're using Next.js, they're using Tailwind. So we came up with this idea of a project called React Email, where you could use that modern stack to create your emails. So you can have type definition using TypeScript and JSX. So no more like, hey, empty space, comma, right? Like that type of stuff. And that was super helpful. And we released React Email in December 2022. And then in January 2023 is when we announced Resend.
Yeah, pretty incredible. I think there's a lot of pain you've probably lived through in building React Email. But in case someone listening to the show has never tried to send an email that looks good before, it is one of the fundamentally hard problems of building things for the internet. Email is formatted in HTML and CSS and on some level plain text, but it is really hard to get email clients to look to be compatible, right? You may remember there's a long period of time where a lot of web developers spent their time making it so that things look the same in Safari and Firefox and Chrome at the same time. Like browser compatibility was a big thing for a long time. And before that, you know, Netscape and all the other things that existed. This whole time, since the internet was born, email compatibility has been an issue because essentially every email provider has different rules for what things they support out of HTML. And a lot of that is like, they try not to do things that will break your experience with email. You know, for example, I don't know, if you think back far enough, you probably don't want an email with a marquee scrolling across it or like blinking images or dynamic stuff loading. So it's just a different problem to solve. And I have tried to send good looking emails in the days long before React Email existed, and essentially every time gave up. It was just like, well, we'll get to good enough and, you know, move forward from there. And this is something that your team attacked head on, right? And I feel like that's a really interesting inroads to then the AI, which becomes interesting too, and was a really good hook to get people interested. So you launched React Email, and then, I mean, it was, I guess, just a matter of weeks before Resend launched. Let's talk a little bit about that. So what is the pitch for Resend?
Yeah. And just one anecdote for folks to think about, like, if you're launching an API, if you're launching an open source project, like whatever it is, it's really important to think about the storytelling. And that's something that I try to spend a lot of time, because that's what's going to resonate with folks or not, right? And we're very much intentional about, let's give before we ask. And the way we gave was through React Email, this open source project. That's the first step of the journey of sending an email, right? You get this beautiful Figma file from the designer. And when you start implementing, you're like, wow, this is so much different than what I'm used to in the web. So we wanted to fill that gap. And the answer was React Email. But after the email was done, I need a way to send it. And again, thinking about primarily that Node.js stack, how does that fit into that world? And from a DX perspective, I feel like no one was really giving the love that email deserved. So like, this thing is so crucial for the web, but no one is investing time to build a proper API or to have an open API spec, to have a Postman collection, like everything that surrounds like building and distributing an API. So that's where Resend came up about, like, once you have the email, you need a way to send it. And it's more than sending, because the moment you send, now you have to worry about Was the email delivered or not? Did it bounce? Was it marked as spam? Where is it? Is it on the primary inbox? Is it on the spam folder? So there's this whole observability on top of email that is taken for granted. So that's why we were like, no, we got to build a dashboard. We got to build the Stripe of email. We got to build the Vercel of email. And that was the whole exercise from day one. How can we do that? So it's going to require amazing docs. It's going to require a lot of attention to detail. It's going to require speed. Like, you can't just navigate on that dashboard and it's extremely slow like other competitors are. So we're just like trying to tick those boxes to really make something that people cared. And I feel like there's something when you go to a website and like you understand if there are SDKs for all the languages, you're like, oh, cool. Like, you start gaining trust from developers by putting those building blocks in place.
Yeah, the storytelling angle of that is really interesting. Thank you for sharing, by the way. I think it's really cool to hear firsthand. I interact with a lot of people who are on the journey of becoming a founder or building their first product or building their, you know, maybe their 10th product, but they haven't had something successful before. And often one of the discussions I have with people that is hardest to convince people is that the story is as important as the product, maybe more important than the product in your early days. And that even if you're building something where the first releases are flawed and hard to use, your early adopters are the people who love the product because they love you or they love your team or they love the brand and the story that you're telling. And that's a hard thing to get across. So how did you land on that as your path for getting this out into the wild? Was this something that you had gained along the way?
I think it's an exercise of looking inwards and thinking, what are the things that I enjoy? When I go to a website and I see that there's a typo or that the design is not as refined, and then I go to the docs and it doesn't really click for me, like I can get to a quick start very easily. When I copy the code and I try to run that code, it doesn't run because there's some silly comma that's missing. And after I run it, like it takes a long time from the moment I sign up and get the API key to the moment I see the value of the product. Just getting to those conclusions myself as a user and then trying to avoid that as much as possible. Like, one thing in the email industry is that when you sign up for all these other services, you got to first request access and they put you on this verification list for 3 days. And then they tell you, oh yeah, now you're approved. As a developer, I hate that with my whole heart. Like, that's so against everything that I believe, that level of friction. Like, I want to be able to experience the API in 30 seconds because that's the time I have on a Saturday afternoon while my daughter is running around. And if I like that experience, then maybe I'll bring it over at work Monday morning. I'll talk to my coworker and say, guys, you got to check out this API. Look how cool it is. So there's definitely, for me, my angle is I'm not building a company. I'm not building a team. I'm building a brand.
Yeah.
And to sustain that brand, I need a stellar team. And to sustain that team, I need a stellar company, stellar machine to be able to sustain that. So not many people think like that because building a brand takes 10 years, right? Or 15 years. It's a long time. But that I definitely spend a lot of time thinking about this rather than, oh yeah, what's the next feature we need to ship?
Yeah. You've just touched on quite a few things that I think add up to a lot. And to your last point that building a brand takes a long time. The story you've told me so far is you building a brand for a very long time, right? This goes back to your HTML5 demo and jQuery core boilerplate and your Dracula theme. Like, one of the very first things I heard about React email was it was, oh, made by the guy who made Dracula. And it's like, oh, that immediately gives it some cachet to me. Mm-hmm. And your name is something that grows in value because I've seen, you know, Zeno attached to half a dozen interesting things. That brand, I'm certain you weren't thinking about this when you're writing Flash and action script code, but like you may not realize it in the current moment, but you're building a brand towards the thing. Whenever you land on what the thing is, people will trust you more. And part of that. The uncomfortable thing for a lot of people is sharing your work early and often. Side projects, no matter how embarrassing you might feel they are, shows that you're working on interesting things and feeds forward in ways that are very unexpected, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny how I think there's a shift in the way people consume things in the world, right? Like, there used to be a time where you're buying a product and you have no idea who the founder of that product is. There's still a lot of cases like that, obviously. Like, maybe that's 90% of the case. But then there's this whole subset of companies that we love using because we also know the founder. I'm sure, I know, love it or hate him, like, there are many people that bought Teslas because, you know, they had an association with Elon Musk 4 years ago. Like, a lot of people love Vercel because they see Guillermo Barre involved. So there's these things that play out. And I definitely feel like the personal brand that, like, I'm always thinking, how does my personal brand follows recent? And how does one support the other? If you, there's some silly things like, oh, you go to the website of that person, right? And then they have a personal website live. That's the first thing. Do they have or they don't? And then you go, it's all of like outdated blog posts and stuff like that. So you're like, oh, okay. Or it's extremely ugly and it doesn't match the values that, so recent is very polished, right? And then you go to my personal website and it's super like, meh, it's just there. Like, no, it needs to communicate that, because then it's a cohesive message that, hey, if you care about details, this will be for you. If you don't, that's totally fine. There are all these other competitors you can do, you can go and use. But if that's something that you, that's important to you, here's another person that also cares just as much as you do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good stuff. A thing that I think we don't often talk about too is, as founders of startups, is that, like, your story is also wildly important to the people who are going to cut you a check worth hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions of dollars. They want to hear about you and your success and know that you have a track history and that you have relationships and, you know, that you're reliable and stable and things like that too. And it adds up, right? I've had investors in our company mention blog posts of mine from years ago that I forgot about, but it's like, oh, I see he was thinking about this back then. It's like, yeah, okay, cool. That's good. Like, I, you know, hope I didn't put too many sarcastic jokes or dumb memes in that post, but I've been, you know, doing it for a long time since then. It really does add.
Yeah.
So Zeno, I'm veering a little bit from our traditional APIs You Only Hate podcast, because I think I could talk forever to interesting founders about the interesting things they're building, but I'm also at risk of a lynch mob chasing me down if I don't start talking to you about OpenAPI before long. So at some point, we're going to have to talk more about being founders and being, you know, a creator and all that other stuff. Tell me about the API side of Recent. Like, what is it like to design an API-first product?
Man, it's so unique, especially because I think we traditionally spend more time on the website, on the back end, on all these other interfaces, and then we don't think about the API as this very unique interface with a very unique set of requirements, such as speed. Like, how do you make it so that the request is as fast as it can be? There's a lot of principles that we try to follow in terms of simplicity that we are very careful of. We sometimes go to other APIs and we see like a lot of information, and then it's hard to translate that to the different use cases that users have. So for us, we're like, how can we make an API to send just one email, just the easiest interface possible? And then there are more advanced use cases later, like, oh, I want to replace a template variable with this content. Okay, let's not care about that right now. Oh, I want to send 100 emails in one API call versus 100 API calls for 100 emails. Okay, let's not care about that. So there's this tension when you're building of, you got to build fast and you got to build high quality, right? And then what people tend to do is just, they're like, oh, I can't have both, so I'm just going to pick one. And if you pick just quality, then it's going to take 2 years for you to ship your API. If you just pick speed, now you are going to introduce tons of breaking changes in the first year that you launch, right? And we know how hard it is to migrate APIs. It's extremely difficult process? I feel like the answer is you got to do both, but then the way you do it is you got to cut scope. So you got to make your API as easy as possible. Like, maybe you're not going to cover all use cases, and that's fine, but you need that minimum lovable product of an API is not just the functionality, is everything surrounding it. And I feel like that's where most people fall apart, because they're like, oh yeah, the API is running. Here it is. Here's an endpoint. No, let me check your dogs. Like, do you have all that surrounding ecosystem that people need to get started? I very much believe that we're living in a SDK first world, not an API first world. I think an API first world was what we were living in 2015. In 2024, we're living in an SDK first world, because that's how people consume APIs. Like, if I want to use, let's say, Firebase, I haven't even started using, I didn't even sign up, but I already know that, oh man, if I use their SDK, I'm sure they will handle offline sync. And I'm sure they will have something already. Like, if I'm using Stripe, I'm sure they'll have some sort of like pagination built in. Like, there's all these things that you know, that you expect that it will make your life easier. So I don't think people start from REST purely. Like, they start from, I love Node.js. I need a Node.js SDK. I love Ruby. I need a Ruby SDK. So we are very intentional about that too. Like, starting day one with a lot of coverage for different SDKs. But it's extremely hard to do that. There's a lot that we can dive into that one particular subject. But I feel like there's a significant shift, and you got to think about everything in between, not only like what's the body and what's the response.
Yeah. Yeah. I like your point about SDK first. We are now trained to want to go, you know, do the NPM install or the pip install or whatever, add the gem for the thing rather than go for the API spec and send, you know, curl requests to chase things down. You mentioned the trade-off between building fast and high quality being scope. And I'm curious how you manage that. Do you have a gigantic backlog of things, and are you reprioritizing them, or do you have a pretty good like roadmap ahead of you that you're building towards?
We have, at all times, we're cutting scope. Even like every single day, because we are building a product that it's not revolutionary, right? Like, it's not like like sending an email has been here forever. It's going to keep existing forever. So our differentiator is quality. And because of that, because we can't just say like, oh no, we're going to ship this thing and it's half baked. And like the good enough doesn't cut for us. So if that's the case, then at all times we are revisiting scope. We might come from a user interview and then we learn all these things and we start implementing. And then we're like, oh, but we got to ship it fast. But we can't ship crappy stuff. So we're like, okay, but we got to remove this feature, remove this other feature, remove this other feature. And I feel like that's a very interesting, like some people are afraid of cutting scope or they feel like they can't push back. So it's important to foster that culture of like, saying no. Like, no, we're not going to do this for this reason. And
what an uncomfortable feeling at first.
Yeah, totally, right? It's super hard, man. Super hard.
Yeah. This is where I should disclose that a few weekends ago, I spent a few hours poking around at Resend's features. And before Zeno and I started recording, I told him I had a list of demands I was going to send his way. So I'm now primed to hear no on plenty of them. And honestly, that's a good sign that you're building a product that has longevity to it as well. I have so many questions to follow on that. So it's really interesting to hear user interviews are a part of your process too. I think for developer tools in particular, that is a really tough thing to do because developer users are highly critical. Wily, like developers know when they're being sold to and may even shy away from that sort of thing. How do you find the right people to do user interviews with?
Yeah. And I feel like the doing a user interview for a visual product is completely different than you doing a user interview for an API, right? We try to get a hold of the people who are actually building this stuff as early as possible. So thankfully, because of all the work that we do and the time that we spend on branding, thankfully, we have a lot of inbound. And we can hear from folks, like there's a very popular open source CMS that is now considering Resend. So what I do is I first, like, let me go to their source code. Like, this is an opportunity where it's actually available. So I can take a look, and then I can see every single API call they make. And I can see, like, what are the parameters? How do they send those things? Like, do they transform the value before sending? What is the type of transformation? Can we do the transformation on the SDK? Like, silly example, like, oh, let's say you're talking about sending attachments, and I can send the whole string, or I can do the base64 conversion already built in. Like, so there are small things that you can try to do, but yeah, we just try to get as much information as possible. And of course, most times the code is not open source, of course. And then when that's the situation, we try to get it, like, yeah, let's screen share, like, whatever you can show me, please do, because then we can make it better, right? Like, we talked to a lot of our friends in the beginning of Resend, like, let me understand your email implementation. What are the ramifications here? Is there anything that we're missing? And cover the most important 20% first and make that exceptional before getting to the other 80.
Yeah, well, right there, that sounds like a super handy tool for cutting scope as well. If you can understand what the most important things are to a solid, you know, group of people, at least gives you a target to build towards. The nice thing I always say to folks about cutting scope is you can add things back later if you find they're really necessary, but you'd also be surprised with what you can get away with.
Yep, that's true.
Your team recently had a pretty large launch week. You had a week-long event of launches called Forward, Resend Forward. You want to talk a little bit about that? What was that week all about?
We try to do these things every so often. I feel like releasing software is not about this one peak moment that happens every year or every 2 years. Like, I see it as a almost like a heartbeat, you know, like you're monitoring, like you need the small releases. Those are your change log weekly, you know, things that you're improving. And then, but you also need the big ones. If you're just not shipping consistently, then you're dead. You got to need that combination. And I think developers appreciate that as well. So we try to be very proactive about releasing things and communicating, even if they're small. But then from time to time, we do an event like that where, like, okay, let's just ship a bunch of things in that same week and really create momentum. That's something that's really important for any product that you're doing. And the whole scope of that week was like, how can we make the API better? Like, I mentioned that example of sending 500 or 100 emails in one API request. That's something that we shipped during that launch week because we heard from our users, like, yeah, I wish I didn't have to send those 100 requests, just one. And then you do the queue on your end. We're like, oh, okay, yeah. So it's one piece less of infrastructure that you need to build. It's not easy to manage a queue. Yeah. You gotta deal with dead letter queues and retries, and it's painful. So, okay, let's deal with that. But we also launched marketing emails, which was something that I think by now listeners already understood that I take a lot of inspiration from Stripe, for example, or other dev tools. And we're very much following that Stripe trajectory of, like, hey, you have the REST API for, like, payments, and then you have Stripe elements. So those are, like, components that you can embed in your app. And then you have Stripe checkout, where it's like a whole standalone thing that you can just point a CNAME to. We're very much following that idea of different abstraction layers. So this one abstraction layer that we introduced now is just an editor, a what you see, what you get editor, that you can send emails without needing to, you know, configure everything.
Cool.
So that's one piece that we're doing. And there are others. You know, I would love for you, like no one wants to build an unsubscribe page. It's the most boring thing in the world. I'm now looking into like, how can we build a Radix or a Shed CN UI similar solution to that, where you're just building the building blocks or the whole thing, depending on what you prefer. So I think that's another way of looking into this, like regardless of what we announced that week, like how do you think about the different abstraction layers that your own API can empower?
Sure. Yeah. And I think anyone listening to this, right, if you're imagining the problem set, you can kind of envision some things that might come from there, and prioritizing that is a super interesting challenge. But it's also about just knowing your product and listening to your user base and hopefully figuring out what's important to them, and, you know, marching towards more productivity for your users probably means more value and more money transparently for the business as well. Yeah, I will make sure there's a link in the show notes to the launches from Resend Forward. I'd imagine that was a pretty hectic week. Was it an all hands on deck situation for your team? How big is your team? Yeah. We didn't even talk about that.
Yeah, we're 6 people total. Not everybody knows how to code or is coding full time. So that means like we have a very small engineering team in practice. So we try to do what's best with what we have. And I think there's something really unique about having a small team as well. I think we're able to move very fast in areas where maybe other companies wouldn't because of it. So it's an interesting balance. But launch weeks are these things that if you want to do that, you got to understand the impact that this will cause, because it's definitely a lot of stress, a lot of attention that you get in return, but you're pushing the team extremely hard for an entire week. And you got to know the consequences of that. Like people will be extremely tired on the following week. They won't be as productive. Or like there's all these things that you need to take into account. So I try to be mindful of those consequences. If I'm doing it, then okay, what are the trade-offs?
Sure. Well, it sounds like you've created not only a very exciting team to be on with sort of high demands and a very at stake interesting product, but hopefully like a healthy place to work where people are excited to be there, and you know, the challenges come and go, but like the reason to be there remains. That's all extremely exciting. And I think that building developer tools is, like you said at the beginning of the show, like an endless game. You know, it's something that there will always be additional things to build for. And I mean, even email lately has had new regulations passed. I think I saw something recently that there's now a requirement for one click on subscribe as like a HTTP header or something like that that you can send along. There will always be new problems for you to solve. I'm curious if you're already thinking about the next sort of what's to come, right? Do you have like a series of things you're excited for? What are you thinking about right now?
There are a lot of directions that we can go in terms of Resend being this one-stop shop for all of your communication needs. And that's our vision in the long term. We are doing email, but we're not necessarily an email company. Maybe email will be the primary thing that we do for the next 10 years, but we don't want to be just that. There's some interesting changes in the market with that affect different communication tools, right? Like sending SMS is getting harder and harder. And I think the magic and the beauty of Twilio that we knew from 2013 or 12 and 11 isn't really there today.
Yeah.
So we could explore that path and start creating APIs for sending SMS, sending push notifications, sending all these other things. But we can also just double down on what our users are telling us, which right now is like inbound emails. They want to be able to receive an email. Okay, let's get that figured out, you know, and we have a lot of challenges around scaling. We're sending dozens of millions of emails every month, and we got to be creative. Like whenever I re-arch, like I talk to my co-founder, we're like, oh yeah, let's think about this new architecture. And then we have this discussion of like, oh yeah, how long do you think this is going to last? Like, oh yeah, maybe 9 months. And then in 3 months, we got to revisit the whole thing because now like we got so much more load than we were expecting. So it's an endless game, but there's some really interesting paths that we could take from here.
Yeah. You are speaking to my soul right now. Cutting scope, staying simple, and being committed to the endless game is a really, really noble pursuit. And I hope it's one that brings you a lot of success and that your users, your team are all happy with the story you're telling along the way here. It has been super, super wonderful to get to catch up with you, Zeno. I hope that we get to do this again in the future. Please consider yourself more than welcome to come back and hang out anytime you have any launches or anything you want to chat about, or if you want to rant to me about OpenAPI, we can do that anytime. Thanks much for joining. Before we go, for people to find you online, and where do people find Resend?
I definitely spend way too much time on Twitter/X. So I think that's the best place you can find me. I'm Zeno Rocha there. So yeah, feel free to follow there. But I'm also on LinkedIn and all these other places with that same username.
Perfect. We'll make sure that's there. And Resend, of course, the website.
Yes. Yeah, resend.com and Resend at X too. Please check it out. Try the API and then let me know if it's good or not. I'll love to hear the feedback of your audience because they obviously care a lot about API design, which is something that I also care. So I'll love your feedback.
Yeah, I would be remiss if I didn't also mention on your behalf that one of my favorite things about Resend right now is that the pricing tiers are extremely generous. You can get in and do a lot for free and really get a good sense of the product. And that is for sure a differentiator and well worth going and giving the things a poke. And I hope our audience does so that you can get lots of angry messages about HTTP headers or, you know, whatever the case may be. We've got a passionate group, and if you're out there, please do give it a shot and chase down Zeno with your feedback. Zeno, thanks so much for joining. I really appreciate it, man. I hope you have a great afternoon. We'll catch you soon.
Thank you, Mike. See everybody.
Take care.